Roxbury. Live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at wioxradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at wioxradio.org, where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but every third Wednesday, we have Mr. Gary Mead come on and talk about a different Catskills tree. How's it going, Gary?
What's up? How are you folks doing out there?
I tell you what, the weather's beautiful today here in Delaware County.
The whole rest of the week. Actually, when last week when I was listening to your show, you were stating a fact that your pears and peaches got froze off.
Yes.
Well, that's when I realized this week we're a little more fortunate in this neck of the woods because our pears didn't blossom until after that cold snap.
Well, my Asian pears.
Right.
Not European.
Oh, all right.
My Europeans haven't come out yet at all, so they're fine. But
well, there's a bunch of wild pear trees on top of Margaretville Mountain, and they are full bloom right now.
Yeah.
The apples are just starting to come around by us.
Yeah.
And they were on a little delayed down by you as well, I guess.
But yeah, they're just starting to come out, and they're fine. But the Asian pears got their butts kicked.
And
the peach are obliterated. The peach got it the worst. I think they blossomed fully out just as it was frosting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're done.
And we got cold. I don't know what you had down there, but we had 22, 25 up in the mountains here. And
wasn't that cold, but it was cold enough.
We were probably down to 28, 27. Yeah. 28, and it didn't do them any good.
No, and it was windy as hell. Well, I don't know. Some say the wind helps. I don't know.
Well, moving air is actually warmer than still stagnant air.
Yeah.
Because it pulls kind of more, you know, warmth out of the earth as it's blowing across it.
Yeah, down in New Paltz in the big orchards in Modena and Plattekill, they would have big stirrers to put air movement onto the orchards.
Well, the old oil pots, I was thinking about them.
Smudge pots. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever they were. But, you know, they were little, they looked like, they were little, oh, I think they held a half a gallon of kerosene.
I remember those.
And they used to put them 2 foot apart in orchards, up and down. They had thousands of them they put out on a night like that when it looked like.
It's crazy.
Well, it's crazy, but at least it saved their crop. But that, what, 2 degree or 3 degree temperature that it raises as the heat's going up into the atmosphere saved a lot of you know, farmers, you know,
yeah,
orchards from freezing.
When we first bought our first dog I ever owned in New Paltz, when I was like, I don't know, 10, 9 years old. So it's like early 90s. Mm-hmm. We bought it in, it doesn't matter, town of Lloyd, Highland area in Ulster County. And the dog was a year old already, and its face when we were picking it up was full of smudge. And that's when I found out about smudge pots, because there was an orchard adjacent to the kennel.
Yeah.
And her dogs would run loose, and they're just full of it.
And it puts all that black, sooty smoke.
Yeah.
That actually coats the leaves on the way up through, I guess, and the flowers keep them. Because it's, you know, oil has a lot higher freezing temperature than water. So.
Yeah. Pretty cool. It's amazing, you know, that it's worth it to do that.
Yeah, they do it in grape, you know, for grapes as well, you know, if it's threatening.
Amazing.
But anyway, I don't think they use them much anymore, do they?
Not that I know of. I've seen those stirrers. Big, like, I don't know, they stir the air by propelling, like a big propeller.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Like a wind tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah, one on each end blowing and one sucking, yeah.
Crazy.
Well, tonight we're talking about white oak.
That's right.
And next month, I just want to put this out there. I was introduced to a new tree, believe it or not, and it was amazing. I have there's a company in Long Island that brings stuff up to have me dry. I mean, all specialty woods. I mean, he's called Urban Specialty Woods, and some of the most beautiful wood I've ever seen came out of his. I mean, curly, burly, whatever you name. Whatever species that has whatever, but you know, these things are, some of them I've got, you know, he has slabs up to 6 foot wide. He sends them out to he gets the logs down in Long Island, sends them out to the Amish, and there's a guy out there with an 84 inch throat band mill that saws them for him, and they come back to me about a year, year and a half later, and I dry them. But this, he brought me a species of he just picked it up a couple weeks ago, and it's called, I said, what the heck is this stuff? Because I couldn't identify it, and it just irritates me when I can't identify something. And I couldn't even guess, but it's a real light wood, and it's called Polonia. And it's a, I didn't do enough research on it, do the show tonight about it, but next month I think I'm going to do a whole show about Polonia. And I just wanted to bring it up tonight because they're flowering now. And Ryan has a couple down by him and around the country that he's, since I mentioned it to him, has been noticing. And they're absolutely stunning. So if you're out there and you see this purple flowered tree, it's probably a Polonia, and they're beautiful, and the lumber is more like basswood than like a basswood or butternut. It's a softer hardwood, but it is a hardwood. And I get very giddy almost when I learn a new tree, and you know, something I didn't even know was out there. I went to Jamaica. That reminds me of a story. In Jamaica, they have lignum vitae, which is called ironwood, and they have two major trees, and the other one's mahogany. And I had this guy Seymour that when we went, I spent about 12 days in Jamaica at one time, and you know, I introduced myself to the natives, and they brought us all around and up and down the block, and he. And I would always ask, what kind of tree is that? Well, the only tree that he identified was lignum vitae, or he called it ironwood, and then the other one was mahogany. And every other tree, I would point to it, and it had flowers on it. He said, well, that's a flower tree. So I guess Polonia, in our minds, would be a flower tree.
Yeah.
And it's not a magnolia, but it's a... I just started doing research on it, and you know, I bought one board from the guy just to put it through the saw and route it and sand it and you know, cross cut it and just see what it, you know, I'm not going to make much out of it, but you know, maybe one, you know, tabletop or something. Or it's a softer wood. So I'm just, I identified it, and it don't seem to have, you know, he sent me the whole log, and it don't seem to have any darker heart than it does sapwood. It's all the same color. I didn't see any variation in color.
Yeah.
And 95, actually all the trees I've ever cut, when you get into the heart, it changes, you know, like cherries, white turns to red, walnuts, white turns to very dark brown, and white oak has a white sapwood, and it turns to, white oak is a very beautiful sound wood. And I chose that to talk about tonight because in the springtime of the year, a lot of people are, especially this year, putting in those raised beds. And most of my career, we just used hemlock. And, you know, once I got going, I realized, you know, hemlock might, if you don't put plastic on the inside, hemlock doesn't like moisture that much, or dirt. It doesn't mind moisture because all these old barns, I've seen barns 120 years old, and the boards are pitted and whatnot and kind of split a little bit, but they're still sound. Hard as a rock. You can't drive a nail through them without pre-drilling them. But anything that's close to the ground, if you notice, on an old barn or building, it will rot off about 5 to 6 inches up. Because and that's the dirt splashing on them. It isn't the water. It's something in the dirt, the soil, that you know, makes hemlock want to rot. So I introduced maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago white oak. Instead of using a 2-inch, because the hemlock, everybody uses 2-inch thick, and, you know, that might last 10 or 15 years. But the white oak will last 30-plus years, you know, without treating it or without putting plastic on the inside of it. And if you do that, you can get a lot more time out of it. But then there's one more that lasts a little bit better, which is black locust. But we went, you know, we can go to a 4 or 6-quarter board on the white oak. You know, it's 3 times the price as hemlock, and that's what keeps some people from buying it. But, you know, if you're going to rebuild your raised beds every 10 to 15 years, I mean, you use white oak, and it'll last 30 to 50 years, depending on how you treat it and take care of it. But then there's black locust, which you don't have to do anything to it, and it'll last 100 years. And actually more, you know, if there's a little sapwood in it, I mean, the sapwood might deteriorate some, but the heartwood is, from what I can see, indestructible. But that's even more than white oak, so that's why people kind of hesitate when they put a raised bed in, you know, when I try to, you know, encourage them to use black locust, because, you know, that's what I'm using for my raised beds, and, you know, I won't ever have to rebuild them again.
A lot of people putting in raised beds, seems to me, right?
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know, I'm getting older, and I don't like bending over and being on my knees in the garden, and, you know, I had foot surgery, and, you know, age takes a toll on you, but nothing you can do about that. So I started this year making 3x3x12 inches deep boxes that are 3 foot tall. And I take a 12-inch box at 3 foot by 3 foot, and I put legs on it and raise it. And I stand up and garden. And it's so amazing and awesome. And then I built a screen where I can, and I made all those out of white oak. I made one out of black locust, and I made the rest out of white oak. But I lined them with plastic and, you know, make them last. But the beauty about those is I took an 1/8-inch galvanized screen, and I screened all my dirt through it. And,
okay.
And I'm growing carrots in one and potatoes in the other two. Potatoes and onions, actually. I got one half full onion and half potatoes. I got one full of potatoes. The other one's full of carrots. And if you're going to plant beets or spinach or anything like that, we can go to an 8-inch box instead of a 12-inch. But the potatoes and the carrots need a lot of room, so you got to go deeper. But white oak is good for a lot of things, and it's a very beautiful tree. If you're, I mean, the difference in the leaf structure of a white oak, they have round lobes. If you look at a red oak, they're very sharp points on the oak leaf. I mean, they both have the same shape. When you look at a white oak from a distance, it kind of looks, it's white. I mean, the hue on the bark is kind of white because the wood isn't white. And I kind of wondered why they called white oak, and because it's actually brown oak. I mean, there's red oak, which
The bark's pretty white.
The bark is very white.
Yeah.
And if you see it from a distance, it almost looks like a chalky color.
It's like sugar maple from far to me sometimes.
Yeah.
But the bark, instead of hinging like a door, it flakes like a red maple vertically. Exfoliates, kind of.
Right. But it's a wonderful wood to saw. It's a tough wood to dry. Well, any oak is honeycombs. Red oak is more apt to do that than the white oak. But, you know, white oak and beech nut and black locust are probably the three crankiest woods to dry. Beech nut by far is probably the worst. I mean, if I get a nice beech nut log in, I don't care if it's 4-quarter, 5-quarter, or 6-quarter boards, I'll air dry them inside for at least a year before I'll even attempt to put them in the kiln. Because I put them in green, even with white oak, and put them on that schedule, they come out all cranky and twisted and whatever. And, you know, you can't really get, long pieces out of them. I mean, short pieces for legs and stuff works out, but, you know, but white oak is, there's another close relative, which is rock oak.
Yeah, chestnut oak.
Chestnut oak.
Same thing.
It is.
Same thing.
And I have, I called Hofer Lumber over there in Calicoon, and, about 3 months ago, and I said, geez, you know, I'm all out of, because I used to buy low-grade logs, and now that I closed the commercial part of the mill down, I'm not buying logs now, and I always got white oak and rock oak in with a mix, because I bought mixed hardwoods, whatever they had on the landing, and I called him up to see if I could get any. He sent me these logs that are 24 to 30 inch in diameter, 10 foot long. They're so beautiful, rock oak. And so I sawed one just to have, you know, wood for people coming in, but it's nobody uses a 24 inch wide board for a raised bed.
Yeah.
So, and
it's pretty similar, right? Isn't it the wood sold the same as white oak, chestnut oak? As far as I know, it's sold at the mills the same way, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know. I never.
They're both sold as white oak, I thought.
Yeah, well, they're in the white oak family. It's in the white oak family.
Yeah.
And, you know, what Matt said to me when he, you know, sent me over the load of logs, because he sent a few whatever else he had, but he said, I don't have white oak, I have rock oak, but it's the same thing. But, you know, I don't tell people it's white oak if it's rock oak.
Right. I just peeled the chestnut oak or rock oak a few weeks ago. Peeled the bark off of it for tannin.
Well, if you use that, I have two more huge logs I'll get the bark from. And if you want it, I'll put a tarp down, let it land on the tarp. You can come shovel it on.
No, I'll take it. The bark is the best.
That's what you were saying, yep.
It's very difficult, though. It's a cranky bark. It doesn't want to come off as readily as hemlock. Hemlock just peels it like a jacket.
My 35 horsepower debarker chews that stuff right off.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm doing it by hand, you know. It's,
yeah, that must, and it depends, you know, even cutting the spring, it holds it a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't, I couldn't figure it out. I've done it in April, I've done it in May, I've done it in June, I think, even, and it just doesn't want to come off. Whereas hemlock, as soon as Memorial Day approaches or even after, it comes off like nothing.
Well, the first log I did got mixed in with the rest of it, but when I do these other two, I mean, there's a lot of bark on two of them big logs. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of bark. You're going to get a little, you know, sapwood in with it, too, because I go just a smidgen below the bark, not much. But you can't help that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like putting it on a lathe. I mean, this thing's on an air system and floats, and, you know, you're running it. I don't know. It's an antique. Everything I have at the mill is antique.
Yeah.
But it works. You know, I have a 1902 edger. I have a 1902 Madison ripsaw, and geez, they're better than the newer thing, newer equipment. They're just amazing. You know, I have the old edger is an old floppy belt. And the belt broke one time. I went over to Bob Hubbles, and he showed me how to fix them. He's got that machine, that little crimper over there that joins them back together, because they do wear out where they join together. You know, from going around and around and around, they, you know, those fingers that, you know, with the little, hell, there's only an eighth-inch pin in the middle of them, you know, the smaller belts, and or 3/16, whatever it is. But, you know, that pin wears out. They fall, you know, they break, and then it frays and whatever. But,
yeah.
You know, I was very intrigued when I went over there and I had this broken belt like 7-8 years ago, and I didn't, you know, the only one I could think of was Bob, and I went to him, and geez, I was back, you know, edging lumber an hour and a half later.
Yeah.
It's just so amazing. I mean, there's so much to learn out there. It's incredible.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is white oak with Gary Mead.
Around the old tree. I'm
All right. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. But every third Wednesday, for years, we've had Gary Mead on, right?
Yeah, this is since 2012.
Yeah, okay. About 8 years.
8 years, yeah.
Yeah, talk about a different Catskills tree. And tonight's tree is the white oak. When I looked it up in our records, this is about show 458, plus or minus. And the last time we devoted only to white oak was show 65. We talked about oak trees in general not too long ago in January, believe it or not. But but white oak, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. You know, you don't see too many white oaks. White oaks aren't doing too well out there, to be honest, Gary. Out of all the oaks, black oak and red oak being the most predominant in the Catskill Mountains, white oak and chestnut oak are less tolerant of shade.
Right.
And they usually lose the battle to sunshine, limited sunshine, to maple and red oak.
Right.
Chestnut oak's even worse. Really, you find chestnut oak as a little Q-tip-like tree dying back in the woods.
Yeah.
And it might not be that big, but it's probably pretty old.
Yeah.
Probably over 80 years old.
30-inch logs I have are probably really old.
Very old.
And it's beautiful stuff. I mean, absolutely, they're all three logs I got were butt logs.
We cut down a chestnut oak last week near Kerhonks in Ulster County. I think that thing was over 135 to 150 years old.
Oh, my God. How big and...
How big? It was big. I had to use I'll tell you exactly how it was. It was a 36-inch bar, and it just poked out the other side. Like,
so
literally.
It was 36-inch, yeah.
Yeah, had to. It was in the wrong spot, and it was dying back again from maple coming up all around it in hemlock, more shade-tolerant trees, and it was up on this little knoll, and these people wanted their house there. But it was dying back, and the only reason why it was as big as it was is because I think it was out in the middle of the pasture once upon a time.
And up on a hill.
Yep. Once upon a time.
Yeah.
And you'll find them on top of hills around here for a reason.
Yeah.
When you have a forest fire, fire always burns uphill normally because oxygen feeds it from the bottom.
Right.
And it'll burn hottest at the top. And chestnut oak gets a little bit of a competitive advantage over other trees because if you look at its bark, very, very blocky, right?
Yeah.
Fire can't penetrate as well as a smooth bark tree like beech, forget about it, and red maple.
Yeah.
So
shagbark hickory, it starts on fire.
Yeah, right. White oak is a little more tolerant of shade, so you'll find some of them, but usually red oaks are doing better than white oak and chestnut oak.
Yeah, but... You know, the maples are dominant in our mountains, of course, but...
They're not going anywhere anytime soon, and, yeah, I mean, I like maple syrup, but I like oak, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the red oaks are doing good, and like I say, the white oak is... You know, I've saved some. You know, my son in Accord cut a white oak. Mitchell, he cuts trees, and about 6-7 years ago, when Max first bought the house, there was a huge white oak hanging limbs over the house and all this. And Mitch went and we spent a weekend, a full Saturday, taking out a red and a white oak. And I actually rented a trailer. And these were on a bank, which was up from us. And I put planks going from the bank. I actually closed the mill down that day, and we got four nice sized logs, and we put planks to, and we backed the trailer up, and then where one was we put planks, and then we took can hooks, and it was kind of going downhill. The first one we went to load was the biggest one, and that sucker was we didn't put anything on the other side of the trailer to stop the stupid thing, like a always in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
The thing rolled off the trailer, and there was, it's a steep bank, goes to a road, and then another steep bank.
Yeah.
And on the other bit where, it didn't quite roll over the second steep bank, which, when you see something like that going on, you just, you don't get in front of a 3,000-pound log to hold it. You say, hope for the best. Well, it fell off the trailer on the other side and landed right on the shoulder and almost went over but didn't. And I just look up and say, you know, thank the spirits and Lord above for everything that just happened here, because it could have been a lot worse. So we loaded the other three logs, and what we did is we spun that one in the driveway, and we loaded it on the back of the trailer because it's only 8 foot. And, you know, we spun it in the driveway and put our planks, you know, going on the back end, and we rolled it into the ends of the other logs. And, you know, it was a good day. But I saw that, and I sold some of it, but, you know, every time I cut a tree or get a tree from a different mountain, I label it. And when, you know, I'm finally getting around to getting my house done and or put up this summer, hopefully we'll get the shell and the roof on. But, you know, we'll see how everybody does in construction and all that, because they've been put behind the eight ball a little bit.
Yeah, they're open now here in Delaware County.
Yeah, they just opened on the 15th, I heard. Yeah. So that's a good thing. So, you know, but this is stuff that could have been done 2 months ago that they're just getting to now and being able to get her done. So, you know, but Race Garth is doing all the drawings. I got my cutting list. I'm sawing everything out of hemlock. My whole house is going to be the beams, the trusses, not the flooring, of course. All the flooring and the paneling in it will be different species of wood, but there won't be one 4x8 sheet of sheetrock in my house.
Yeah.
I don't get along good with sheetrock. I don't like it. I tried it. You know, I put an addition on my house 25, 30 years ago, and we sheetrocked in between the two rooms we put. And, you know, I had to hire somebody to come in, because all I did was sand through the paper into the rock, and, oh, what a mess I made. Well, and then I saw this guy come in, and lickety-split, he was like an artist with it.
I mean,
with a paintbrush, he was amazing.
Yeah.
So what I learned in my life is let people that do the things the best do it, and the things you can do the best, then you do that.
Yeah, it's called division of labor.
Yeah, and, you know, no one love everything. But, okay, the white oak.
White oak.
Oh, acorns.
Yeah, they're still tannic, by the way.
They're, well,
people
still
call them sweet, but they're not sweet. You would pucker your mouth and want to kill yourself if you ate one, usually.
Well, I've tried red oak, and I've tried white oak.
Yeah.
And I have to spit red oak out faster than I spit the white oak.
Right, faster. That's what I'm saying. But I read these things like edible wild plants, and they make it sound like it's sweet. And I'm like, I don't know if you could use the word sweet in any description.
If you compare it to red oak, it has a certain slight sweetness to it.
Yeah, we've talked about
it. It's not sweet.
No, I mean, they are edible. Completely edible, but as humans used to do for thousands of years, you have to leach them quite a bit in a stream or something, and then they're edible.
Yeah,
I tried it. They still didn't taste like much. You can see why humans gravitated towards grains once they could get their hands on flour and wheat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we have oaks in Europe, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's oaks in Europe as well. But, they're totally edible, though.
Yeah, no, I know the deer like the white oak probably better than the red oak and the squirrels, but
yeah, I know bears
they
do.
They will eat both.
I know bears do. They go after white oak any day.
They eat both of them. They don't hesitate. If they're hungry, they eat it, and that's how it is. And it's just amazing how the palate of different animals and what they tolerate and what they eat and what's nourishing and they're survivors. And It's really an amazing nature. Just freaks me out.
You know what freaks me out?
Every
day. That deer, right? They'll eat acorns that are so tannic. This is how different deer are from humans as far as taste. They won't. They'll eat acorns all day long like it was the best thing ever, like you and I eating our favorite meal, right?
Yeah.
But they won't really browse readily black birch. which tastes like wintergreen, which I'll chew on while I'm hiking, or a yellowbird, same thing
I
as
always,
well.
If I'm in the woods and I see I'll take a black birch.
Yeah, they won't eat it.
And I'll chew on the stem.
I mean, it tastes good.
I know.
They won't touch it. Not as much. That's why in the Catskill Forest Preserve, you got black birch growing up all over the place because they don't browse it as much.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the hemlocks dying back from woolly adelgid in the openings are black birch coming up in the wilderness areas of the Catskill Forest Preserve.
Yeah, well, birch and poplars will take over that. Where the ashes are dying, they're probably going to be taken over by birch and maple and, you know, other species. Yeah. I mean, nothing sits still out there. It just keeps going and going. But
yeah.
And this is a...
We're good on time.
All good. Well, I'm going to read a poem tonight called Dandelions, but that'll be at the end of the show.
Yeah, it's...
I was going to Delhi the other day, and I saw a field of dandelions that I had somebody with me, and you know, I was like, I almost slammed the brakes on, and I said, because I haven't seen a field that it was yellow, and it was solid yellow. And you see a dandelion, right now the dandelions are peaking, and you see, you know, patches, and it's beautiful out there. But this field was yellow. There wasn't any green in it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But it brought back a childhood memory. When I was a kid, I used to run through fields like that in bare feet, and my feet would be yellow. I'd probably get stung a couple of times by a honeybee or any other bee that was out there pollinating. But I didn't care. It was when you're young and dumb like that, I can remember, you know, I'm 65 now and I feel pain. Back then,
yeah,
there was no pain. It was amazing. And, you know, I didn't start feeling pain until I was about, you know, 55 years old, and it's a new world for me. It's like, gee, what the heck's going on here? But, you know, we'll get back to some white oak. I love sawn white oak. It smells almost like nutty when you're sawing it. It's kind of hard to explain, but as I explained before, when you're at the sawmill and you're sawing a board off a tree, off a log, a green log, what you see is what you're going to see when that log is planed and has a finish on it at the end result. And it's and I just realized I saw lumber a long time, but, you know, I discovered that maybe 30, 35 years ago, that whenever I cut into a log, whatever I see is going to be the end result of that piece. And, but you know, when you put it through the air dryer, it changes color. White oak turns very white when you're air drying. It kind of grays up, which is a natural instinct for an exterior woods that gray up will last long outside. Cherry and there's different other, you know, and maples, they get black. So what happens now is if you wear a black T-shirt out in the sun, your body's going to be uncomfortable. If you wear a white T-shirt, it reflects the sunlight. The black one absorbs it. So if there's wood outdoors and it turns dark, that wood's not going to last very long because of the fact that when the sun comes out, the cells expand and contract, you know, with cool heat, and it wears them out. It actually wears the cells out. And then they open up, and they take water and whatever. But when they gray up, it reflects the sun. And, you know, because black walnut, I have a door in the gallery where I have, it's made out of black walnut, and the outside of the door is gray, and the inside of the door is just as black as the day that I made it. Yeah. But, you know, that graying up process is a natural deterrent for wearing it down.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't get as hot, the cells don't expand and contract as much and open up. But white oak is a very good outdoor wood.
Now, yeah, is it, what else can, Like, what do you use it for if someone's going to buy a white oak? What's a particular use besides planters?
Well, it makes beautiful furniture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's handles. You know, I like to use it for different, you know, if you're going to have build a chest of drawers, you want to use white oak for the slides. And whatever you use for the drawer sides, or you know, whatever you're making out of cherry, whatever. But the interiors, you can make them out of white oak, and they'll never wear out.
A lot of people are familiar with you know, white oak being kind of waterproof. Like Jack Daniel's uses it for whiskey barrels. What about for flooring?
Flooring, great. I have white oak in my mudroom, and you can't wear it out.
Is it the more durable than other woods?
It is. Yeah, it's
for
hard
that, for that reason.
It's harder. Yeah,
because it doesn't soak up moisture when kids spill like a gallon of water.
Well, actually, it depends on your application of that.
Yeah.
Because whenever I sold the floor to somebody, I said, yeah, you got to seal the bottom, the ends when you're putting it together. When you do a fresh cut, seal that. Your tongue in the groove, seal them. As you're putting it, you know, put a coat of finish on, you know, the bottom before you lay it down.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people didn't listen to me. They had a spill. And what happens is, just because you don't see the bottom, it doesn't mean it's not important. It's very important, because they had like a heater, that pipe or something, that broke in their house. And now what happens is it hits the top of the floor, soaks down through the bottom of the floor, no finish on it. It's raw wood, and it absorbs the moisture, and that's when your floor buckles. And I put my white oak floor in, and I sealed the heck out of the bottom. And, you know, in the wintertime, one winter, I had shoulder surgery, and I didn't have enough. I still got to work wood, so I moved into my mudroom, and I had a 2-gallon bucket there with water in it, and I went to back up and kicked it over on my white oak floor. And, of course, I said a few choice words, and then I got the shop vac, and I vacuumed it all up. And you got to know that water went to the bottom of that floor. I mean, water is amazing how fast it penetrates stuff. But I didn't have any disturbance in my floor at all. So that proved my point, but it just makes sense to me. I mean, my whole life is based on common sense and paying attention, and it's amazing what those two, you know, very small comments will get you through life, because it's just amazing. Just pay attention to what's out there, and it's pretty cool to see what goes on. And, you know, when I'm walking through the forest, I never have studied trees and books and that. And, you know, I can spot a white oak from, you know, 100, 200 feet away. I'm like, God, look at, and now, you know, when I'm walking towards it, I'm getting all weird inside, saying, oh my God, that's a white oak. And what is that doing here? You know, you don't see stands of white oak that are enormous, like the red oaks and the maples.
Nice.
I mean, they're here and there. And the same thing with basswood. You know, and basswood and white oak kind of look sort of similar with the bark from a distance. But, you know, I've gotten so, you know, I can pick them out pretty readily. And they're pretty amazing trees to get into the mill and saw and dry. And I've made flooring out of white oak. I've made entertainment centers out of it. And I use it for interiors of chests of drawers and stuff that's going to take a lot of beating over time. White oak is one of the woods that the longer it ages, even though it's kiln-dried, when you use it for something, there's a few woods out there, soft maple and yellow pine, they get harder with age, and hemlock. You know, when they're fresh sawed, they're, you know, you can put a nail through them, basically. Or actually, when they're green, any green hardwood, you can drive a nail through except locust. That'll split. If you take a 6-inch board and put a nail in the middle, it'll separate. Or actually, you usually can't get it through there. Bend the nail before you get it through. But any other wood, fresh sawn, white oak, hard maple, soft maple, cherry, beech, you can actually drive a nail through them when they're green. But, you know, a week later, forget about it. Yeah. They already start curing and turn super hard.
Does that have something to do with, like, I don't know?
Well, the cells are fat and they're full of water.
Okay.
And once they shrink, white oak is one of the, it's a very stable wood. It doesn't shrink. You know, you can take an 8-inch board of cherry and dry it. It'll be maybe 7 5/8 to 7 3/4. You take a white oak board 8 inches wide and you dry it, it's 7 7/8 when it's dry. It's got a very tight grain pattern. And I went to a stave mill that actually made whiskey barrels in Kentucky. And I walked into the office. I went to see my nephew down there, and he said, "Oh, I got just a thing for you." We went and he knew this mill, and I showed him my card, and they handed me a pair of earmuffs and a pair of protective glasses, and we walked through their whole mill, and out where the logs come in, and they use only white oak, and it's quarter sawn white oak. And we went out to where the deck was, and, you know, they get logs in 8, 10, 12-foot lengths. They grade them, and the top and bottom of the barrel, or rather the two ends of the barrel, there's no top and bottom really, but the two ends of the barrel, they have a different grade. They can use a lower grade for that because it's just straight boards. The staves, which are the sideboards that they bend and curve, they're different. They got to be the selecting better in the upper part. So I'm walking through, and we spent about a half hour, 45 minutes walking through the mill. It was a nice, they must have had, you know, 30, 35 employees there, and all these, you know, these, but out on the landing, they would cut them down to whatever length they would get graded, and, you know, if they're going to be for the top of the barrel, they would cut them in well, it was equal into three lengths of the end of the barrel, which you would be about 3 foot or 4 foot, whatever it was. But the staves, they graded them and they got cut into a different length log. And when they come into the mill, they went down the chute, and depending on what grade it was, because it had I call it a magic crayon. This guy put a different color X on the end of each log that come through, and this ultraviolet light would read it and kick it to whatever it was going. It was all quarter sawn, but the different grades went to different places, and you know that, and they went through a different process. But when I was walking through the mill, I noticed that there was a lot of pinkish in the logs. And so when I got back to the office, I asked him, I said, "Geez, I thought you only used white oak in your process here." And I said, "I saw a lot of pink wood walking through there." And he goes, "Oh, that's the ultimate white oak, because that's the older growth tree. 60 years and older, they start to get a pinkish hue to their heart."
No kidding.
And, yeah, that's what I said. No kidding. Because yeah. Hofer lumber, you know, I was buying lumber from him for years before I knew that. And I had this stuff that had kind of reddish color, and I would pull it out. And I sold, you know, I get a lot more for white oak than I do red. You know, a lot, not a lot more, but more. And I was pulling out, and I was selling white oak as red oak. And he said, "No, that's the 60 years and older, they start to get a pinkish heart. And the bigger board that you see means the older the heart." He said, "No, the white oak after 60 years turns kind of a pinkish heart.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And I didn't know it either. But I learned it then, and it was a good learning experience. And, you know, I'm just glad that I flipped that guy my card. Because, you know, we went into the office and they go, oh, what do you, you know, they wanted to take our order and blah, blah, and kick us out the door and get rid of us. And once I showed him my card and he saw some of the stuff that I did, he said, I think I'll take you for a personal tour through the mill. And that was awesome.
Well, you got something. We got about 6 minutes left, Gary. You want to read the poem?
I do. Well, this is called Dandelions. And I wrote this back 5/18 of 2015, 8 o'clock at night. This is a time of the year when the dandelions are, they're so beautiful. And, you know, for years, people have a hate for dandelions. I just don't get it. It's called Dandelions. Finding myself again, parked on shoulder of the road, embracing my paper and pen, the hand of a welcome friend. Only a few minutes from home. Time is now to write. Had to pull over while the thoughts were fresh. Dandelions are now the topic at hand, weighing heavy in my brain. Deep thinking made me realize it is time to defend. Dandelions not respected, even hated, which I do not understand. Do these haters of dandelions ever stop to think why they think they hate dandelions so much? Constant spraying of poisons around many homes. It's true. This is where you live and breathe, yet you dump poison all over. This is really just insane. Poisoning all around your homes. This is putting you and me in harm's way. Definitely. Compromising tomorrow for decisions today, it is unsettling to see. We should embrace our dear dandelions, respecting naturally, as a vital staple in our diets, warding off bad diseases, for our health to preserve, arriving early spring every year. Dandelions really our friends. Their beautiful faces sincere. Embrace them with joyfulness. Think and stop poisoning them. All around where we play and live. Because a little many times will end up being a problem that is big. Cancer is not a friend. Dandelions ought to be worshipped. Held close to our hearts dear. Not disrespected. Hated. Poisoned. Or feared. And that's my poem for tonight. So I harvest dandelions every year. I harvest enough to for a year's supply. I eat dandelions every day. I dry the leaves and I put them in a smoothie, and I dry the roots and the stems separate. I make them into a powder and I use them as a spice, and I sprinkle them on soups and all that stuff, but they're kind of bitter. The flowers are super. I mean, if you pick a warm dandelion flower right now, don't pick them along the highways. They're a little bit chancy there, but out in the middle of a field that hasn't been sprayed, if you, you know, pick dandelions, especially out in the woods where there's an open area, there are dandelions everywhere. You're not going to stop them. Thank goodness for that. But anyway, eating a warm dandelion is so refreshing, and it's sweet. It's like I can't say a berry because it doesn't have the juice of a berry, but it's super sweet when you eat a dandelion flower. And the leaves and the stems are very bitter, but the flowers are sweet. I guess that's why they make wine out of them. I've never made dandelion wine. I mean, I'm so busy in the spring, I just really haven't had time to do the process. But yeah, I was thinking of asking Joe Hewitt this year about that, but he makes some mean dandelion wine. I was sitting up in his house one evening, and oh boy, we had a couple of glasses of it, and I said, geez, Joe, you got spare room here? I can just crash on the floor tonight. I was getting you know, I only had three little glasses, and when I went to leave, I said, oh, boy, this is maybe. And he said, well, do all your lights and blinkers work on your truck? I said, yep. He said, well, you just get in your truck and drive home, go to the speed limit, don't do anything stupid, and you'll be fine.
I guess he didn't want you there, huh?
I guess not.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway, well, that's how he
was like, no, navigated. You ain't staying here.
As long as all your lights work, don't be scared. That was his whole point, basically.
Yeah. Well,
anyhow,
but if you're looking for white oak, it's hard to find around these parts of Delaware County. There's more in the West Branch, probably, than the East Branch.
I have it at the mill. I have kiln dried, yeah. And I have green, and I have some.
No, but I mean the trees.
Well, if you're looking for the trees, yeah.
Yeah. You'll find it more when you get into the Schoharie or the Hudson Valley.
Well,
well,
the white oaks and the walnuts seem to be, they team up. There, when you go through Schoharie on, you know, the village there, it, you know, after you, well, I there's a bunch of walnuts and white oaks on their lawns there, and they seem to, but they're, you know, they're, no other trees are intimidating them, because walnuts kind of a, they don't like a lot of shade either.
No.
But, the white oak is a very special wood. It's a beautiful wood that grows in our forests, and it should be well respected. And, you know, if you have a project you want to use some white oak, I mean, I don't throw much of that away, you know, especially once it's kiln dried. And I pull it out whenever I get low grade wood, and I actually don't run too much of it through. I never did through the dimension mill. I pulled it out and saved it because it is not, you know, it's 10 to 1 with red oak, basically. You get 10, one white oak tree for every 10 reds for the most part.
Well, that's all the time we got on From the Forest. Thanks for listening. And if you missed the show, it was White Oak with Gary Mead. And see you next Wednesday at 6.
All right. Peace, brother.
All right. Have a good night.
The wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase the old man made his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Above the canyon streets, and the con man con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more, for the old man has come.